ladies and gentlemen. You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, last night, the worst scenario was almost realized. And I'm going to tell you about it in just a couple of minutes. First, I want to thank all those people who have already sent in your donation. And, And I want to ask all of you who have not yet sent in your donations to please do so right now. The address is HOTT, H-O-T-T, in care of 101.1 FM. That's 101.1 FM. HOTT, H-O-T-T, in care of 101.1 FM. P.O. Box 940. That's P.O. Box 940. Well, I'm having problems with this thing. Here's the address. P.O. Box 940, folks. Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's HOTT, H-O-T-T, in care of 101.1 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Well, this thing's just not going to play the game, is it? And those aren't in there. So, having a hard time here with this thing. And I don't know why. Now I know why. Got it fixed. Stay tuned, folks. I'm going to tell you about the attack of the teenage ninja owls. Ladies and gentlemen, have you ever had an experience that just absolutely defies description? A happening that is a story, you know, will be with you for the rest of your life. Something that is beyond funny, that is absolutely hysterically hilarious. I'm talking way down deep, so gut funny that it really hurts bad. But you just can't stop laughing. Well, folks, I had one of those last night. But before I can tell you exactly what happened. Because we have so many new listeners, I've got to give the background. Because if I don't, they won't have any idea why all of this happened. It all started in 1988 when I discovered that there is no law that was ever passed by Congress requiring me to file or pay the income tax. I was dumbfounded. In fact, I couldn't believe it. So I called the Internal Revenue Service and asked them to quote me the law passed by Congress that required me to file and pay the income tax. Now, you can imagine my surprise, because I think you would have reacted in the same way, when they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. So I began doing a lot of research in the law libraries around Southern California, where I live, but I couldn't find any law requiring me to file or pay the income tax anywhere. I asked a couple of CPAs who were friends of mine who specialized in income tax for their clients. They couldn't tell me either. So I called my senators and representatives' offices, and guess what? They also could not give me an answer. When I asked them why they filed and paid, they couldn't answer that question either. I talked to lawyers, some of them friends of mine, some of them acquaintances, some of them recommended by other people. I talked to judges. I even made a few more calls to the Internal Revenue Service trying to get higher up the line, but no one knew the answer. Or at least if they did, they sure were not going to tell me. That became glaringly clear. So I made up my mind, folks, that unless the government could show me a law that required me to file and pay the income tax, I simply was not going to do it. And I believe that that's the way it should be in this country. You want me to do something, show me the law. If it's a law, and if it's constitutional, I'll do it. I'll be the first one in line, the very first in line. My stand was then, ladies and gentlemen, and it still is now, solidly upon the law. Solidly upon the law. If there is a law that requires me to do it, why can't anyone produce it, especially those in government? We want to lock everybody up if they don't. How does that happen? Well, over the years, I found the answer. It's very simple. There just simply is no such law. Now, I'm not a tax protester. I'm an American patriot. My whole life has been devoted to service to my country. This broadcast is service to my country. I served in both the United States Air Force and the United States Navy, and served as a river patrol boat captain in Vietnam, in the hottest combat zone in Vietnam. And I didn't just go out for a week or two and then come back and spend, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in a base camp. We patrolled every night, all night, in the blackest, worst, rainiest, coldest, hottest, clearest, most deadly nights of the war. I didn't do that because I don't love my country, and I didn't do it because I'm anti-government, and I didn't do it because I'm some kind of a cheat. I did it because I love my country. I've never made any attempt to cheat on any tax that I am constitutionally and lawfully required to pay. I pay all taxes that are due all the time, except one. The one that nobody can produce a law that requires me to file and pay, and that's the federal income tax. And until they do, I will not. And I have been telling them for years, I will not do it until you can show me the law that requires me to do it. And don't point to that little blurb in the Form 1040, which isn't even for you in the first place, and quote me that, because in the first place it's not a law. It's a regulation. And in the second place, it does not require anybody to file and pay. It quotes those made liable. And nowhere can I find a law that makes me liable. Or you, for that matter. I can't find a law that makes you liable either. I have never run, never hid, never made any secret about what I am doing. People have contacted me with money and escape routes and all kinds of stuff, trying to get me to go into hiding or leave the country, and I simply will not do it. Only criminals run and become fugitives. I am not a criminal. I have challenged the Internal Revenue Service in letters, on the telephone, and over the airwaves to simply produce the proof that I'm required to file and pay the income tax. They have never done it. They cannot do it. And they will never do it. I have submitted reams, stacks of federal Office of Freedom of Information Act requests, called FOIA, F-O-I-A, Freedom of Information Act requests, in an attempt, an honest attempt, to force them to produce any documentation that would or could legitimize their position, and the only thing I've ever received from them is more proof that I'm not subject to file or pay the income tax. In fact, if you start doing the same thing, you're going to be amazed, and then you'll become extremely angry, just like I did. I began broadcasting the results of the FOIAs and my research, as you all know, who have been listening to this broadcast for many years, on my international radio broadcast, The Hour of the Time, which you are listening to now, in conjunction with other research that proved beyond any shadow of any doubt that the federal government has gone way beyond its limitations and indeed has become despotic. And I don't just get on the air and say it. I prove it to you, document it, challenge you to prove me wrong, give you the places where you can go find the same documentation. I even admonish you to listen to everyone, read everything, believe absolutely no one, including me, unless you can prove it in your own research, and nobody else does those things for you. Ruby Ridge, Waco, the Oklahoma City bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building added an awful lot of fuel to this fire. Our investigation into the Oklahoma City bombing, which resulted in Michelle Marie Moore's encyclopedic work entitled Oklahoma City Day One, proved that the government not only knew in advance the bombing was going to take place, but at least two agencies were implicated as accomplices with full knowledge of what was going to happen. It became very clear to me, and I've told you this on many occasions, that Timothy McVeigh was a patsy, just like Lee Harvey Oswald. And I told the world on this broadcast. It wasn't long before The Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen, became the most listened to international shortwave broadcast on earth. Possibly even in history. And when I began to unravel the cover-up surrounding the Oklahoma City bombing, an awful lot of people in Washington, D.C. got really scared. Oklahoma City Day One scares bookstores so much that they will not purchase it and stock it on the shelf. I identified the man the Federal Bureau of Investigation claimed did not exist as Michael Brescia, a government informant known to you as John Doe Number 2, who is currently serving a prison term for bank robbery. I identified the source of financing. I identified the whole scheme, as a matter of fact. It's on the website, if you care to go and track it down, it's all there. The White House, in their fury, leaked a memo to Rush Limbaugh, who read it on the air during his radio broadcast. And in the memo, President Clinton named me, William Cooper, the most dangerous radio host in America. After that, Radio Shack couldn't keep a shortwave radio on the shelf for 5 minutes for several years. And my phone didn't stop ringing for months. I discovered, ladies and gentlemen, that my FBI file was included in those in possession of the White House comprising the scandal known as Filegate. And it wasn't just 500 files they had. They had over 2,000 files on people that the administration considered enemies of the Clinton administration during those years. Well, a lot of people say, well, you must be a criminal if you had an FBI file. That's not true. You see, my FBI file began when I was a little boy, when I wrote a letter to J. Edgar Hoover on his birthday. I wished him happy birthday. I was a little boy. Anytime you communicate with the FBI in any manner whatsoever, a file is opened on you. If you submit a request under the Freedom of Information Act to have a copy of your FBI file sent to you, and there never was an FBI file, that request will open one. My file was expanded when I was in the Air Force and was required to obtain a secret clearance. It was expanded even further when, in the United States Navy, I was required to obtain a top secret sensitive information compartmentalized security clearance. And so that's where my FBI file came from, for those of you who are so ignorant that you think you have to be a criminal to get one. All you have to do is write a letter to the FBI. All you have to do is call the FBI. Submit a Freedom of Information Act request to see your record. If it doesn't exist, that will start one. And when they send you your record, that's what they'll send you. All the paperwork generated by your Freedom of Information Act request. I also discovered that I had been targeted, not just me, but my family. President Clinton had directed every single agency of government to investigate me with the intent to shut me up. People began to call and ask me why the FBI, the Secret Service, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the Internal Revenue Service had all been to their homes asking questions about me. And many of you listening to this broadcast tonight know it's true because they came to your home. Long-time friends, people that I thought were solid, disassociated themselves, proving that most Americans are nothing more or less than miserable cowards. They knew I hadn't broken any laws and that I hadn't done anything wrong and that I was doing everything possible to uncover either the legality or the criminality of the federal income tax system. But I never wavered, ladies and gentlemen, in my resolve, not ever, not once. This is my country. They can't take it away from me that easily. I will fight them to the death. literally to the death. The IRS would not or could not produce any documents proving that it is an agency of the Department of the Treasury or of the United States government. I proved conclusively years ago that it cannot possibly be an agency of the Department of the Treasury, and the other night I proved to you conclusively that it is not, by their own admission, an agency of the United States government. The IRS could not produce any delegation of authority or jurisdiction allowing them to perform the terrible things they do all the time, or any law passed by the Congress requiring me to file and pay the income tax. And so I sued them in United States District Court, Phoenix, Arizona, during which suit they perjured themselves twice, and I was clearly winning the battle. Clearly winning the battle. That's when tyranny reared its ugly head, and they did some things that are so unlawful, so unconstitutional, so outside the realm of due process, as to justify a complete loss of faith of the American people, including me, in the entire federal justice system. I have no faith in it whatsoever. The Internal Revenue Service, seeing that they were backed into a corner, and if they had to produce the documents that I had requested, and it was looking like that's exactly what the court was going to order, they got together with the United States Attorney for Arizona, convened a grand jury to which the U.S. Attorney and several federal agents and special agents of the Internal Revenue Service repeatedly lied, and would not allow me to testify. Wonder why they wouldn't allow me to testify. Most prosecutors love it when the defendant agrees to get on the stand, but not in this case. The grand jury was not told that I would be happy to file and pay the income tax if the Internal Revenue Service, or anyone for that matter, could produce a law that required me to do so. They didn't tell the grand jury that for years I had been trying to get them to produce the paperwork to justify their actions, and that they could not and would not produce anything. The grand jury was not told that I had sued the IRS and that the suit was open and in progress in United States District Court at the time that they had convened the grand jury. They didn't tell them that I was winning my case and that the IRS would be in deep trouble if indeed I won, a predicament putting the IRS in a very, very bad position. And so the grand jury brought indictments against me and my wife, or so I read in the newspaper. I've never seen any of the paperwork, any of the indictments, any of the subpoenas, or any of the warrants, but I have good friends in law enforcement who have run the check on the National Crime Information Computer and tell me that it's all true. They brought indictments against me and my wife, a woman who's never broken the law or done anything wrong in her life. It wasn't long before I learned that warrants had been issued against subpoenas that had never been served for failure to show in court. Yet we'd never been served with any papers of any kind whatsoever. Now this is a terrible criminal act that the government has committed against us from beginning to end. It is a denial of due process, a despotic perversion of our legal system in order to escape the judgment of the court by making it impossible for me to walk into court and prosecute my case against them. No grand jury would have brought indictments if it would have known the truth. Not one grand jury in this nation, probably in the entire world, would have dared bring an indictment against us. Because of the warrants, I could no longer prosecute my legal action against the Internal Revenue Service due to the threat of arrest. You see, that was the whole purpose of the indictments. I sent a notice to the judge withdrawing my suit against the Internal Revenue Service since I could no longer make an appearance in court and if there was no judgment made, then I could pursue the same case at some later date. At the same time, I noticed the court in the filing of our change of address, and it's all there in the records of the court. Now, I don't know what happened because I never received any other communication from the court whatsoever. It is clear that they ignored the address change on record in the filing. But I can guess, ladies and gentlemen, from my research into what federal judges have done in the past when the government is losing a case, that the judge probably ignored my withdrawal and made a default ruling in favor of the Internal Revenue Service because I did not show up in court. Now, if that is indeed what the judge did, it represents another incredible injustice. In 1998, Federal Bureau of Investigation Special Agent Steve Fillerup, whom I knew, he's stationed in Pine Top, he's the FBI agent for the White Mountains, I talked to him on several occasions. He was always asking me questions about the militia, to which I replied he should join. Well, he never joined, and I never told him anything about the militia. But he came to see me one day in 1998, or at least he tried. He stood on the road below the house and shouted up that he had a letter for me. I refused to accept it. I told you all about this before. I told him that the legal system is corrupt and that we will not trust our lives to it. I informed him that we will not bow to tyranny and will defend ourselves with the force of arms if any government agent attempts to harm us. It is our right. I told him to tell his bosses in Washington, and this is paraphrased because I can't say what I really told him over the radio, that they made a big mistake. To my surprise, he agreed. His exact words, I can tell you, he said, "You know, Bill, I think you might be right." Exact words. In 1999, fearing for my wife and for my children, I sent my wife and children out of the country so that they can be safe from this tyranny. I remained because I will not desert my country and I will not run away from the battlefield. I have broken no law. I am not a fugitive. I will not run. My stance is completely upon the law. I am perfectly willing to die for this country and for what I believe, if that is the only way to break Washington's tyrannical hold over the people of this country. But I knew that they were not going to ignore me for very long. A few months ago, I got the word that FBI Special Agent Steve Fillerup had been transferred from the Pine Top office to some city up in Utah, and that he had been replaced by Special Agent Jay Rominger and Special Agent Doug Hansen. And I gave you that information on the air when I learned it. Ladies and gentlemen, replacing one FBI agent with two in a rural area like this is significant. This place has not grown that much, and there's not that much federal crime up here. In fact, we had a watch on Steve Fillerup all the time, and he did more driving around and sitting on his butt than he ever did any work. And these guys are going to be about the same way, probably. So there must be a reason they're here. I've also been informed that a lot of pressure has been put on these two new guys to bring me in. It's no surprise to me. I've been expecting it. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you right now and serve notice on the federal government, I will not bow to tyranny. I will not serve a despot, and you will not bring me in unless I am dead. And you will not kill me easily. I will defend myself. And I think if you check my citations from the Vietnam War and my record from the Vietnam War, I don't think you're going to want to test that proposition. But if you must, then get it over with, as you tried last night. A couple of weeks ago, and I told you about this too, a United States Marshal began harassing my daughter and her mom again in an effort to get Jessica to cooperate with the government. He told her that the Internal Revenue Service had asked the United States Marshal Service to bring me in before April 15th, proving, once again, that the IRS knows it has no jurisdiction here. No powers of arrest, no power of subpoena, none of those things. And I have all the paperwork to prove it. They know I have that paperwork, and that's why they asked the United States Marshal Service to see if they have some fools working for them who are willing to come up here and get killed doing the dirty work for the criminal, Nazi, Gestapo, jackbooted thugs of the Internal Revenue Service. You see, the United States Marshals don't have jurisdiction anywhere within the territorial boundaries of the state of Arizona either. And I've also proven that. I've sent all the proof to the Apache County Sheriff, the Chief of Police of the City of Springerville, the Chief of Police of the City of Eager, the Mayor of the City of Eager and Springerville, the Head of the Department of Public Safety, which is Highway Patrol, to all of those of you who don't have those things in your state. Highway Patrol and DPS, the same thing. So it's on record. Well, the gist of the whole thing is the marshal wanted information. In particular, he wanted to know my movements, times that I come and go, and the places that I frequent. He wanted my daughter to rat on her father. That's how despicable these scum are. He also wanted her to draw the inside layout of my home, indicating where I sleep, and etc. Now, I can't tell you what she told him, but suffice it to say that he was very disappointed. So, ladies and gentlemen, I have been expecting midnight visitors for some time now. And it was no surprise when last night we got some of those visitors. And that's what I'm fixing to tell you all about. Now that you have the background, I can tell you what took place up on this mountain in the dead of night. Started around 2 o'clock in the morning, folks, when several of the alarms that I have placed all around this mountaintop went off. At the same time, my neighbor's geese began making a terrible racket. Dogs began barking in the yard below the hill. I heard Crusher, my fearless buddy, charge out of his doghouse and stand silent in the dark, exactly as he has been trained to do. I scanned the hill with the night vision scope. The first thing I saw was a signal from the northern sentry indicating somebody was up here. pretty soon I was able to count six black-clad armed men in a semicircle on the north side of the house, moving very slowly toward me. They hadn't seen the sentries that were behind them and on their east flank. I slung the scope, picked up my rifle, grabbed three 30-round clips, and very quietly exited to the south. You see, folks, there's no position that cannot be overcome. It is futile to bunker down in the face of an attack. You see, I fought a war, so I know how to fight one. And they will find that I'm not like anyone that they've ever come against before, and some of them discovered that last night. I don't know who these men were. I don't know who they represented, and I'm not going to pretend to know. But they were a threat, they were armed, and they were coming for me. I moved silently around the hill just below the crest line to the east side of the house facing the door, the front door, at a distance of about 60 yards. And ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to believe this any more than I believed it when I discovered it. For an incredible thing happened. A most incredible thing happened. That's when I heard ladies and gentlemen, the Hooters. Huh? Yep, that's what I said. That's when I heard the Hooters. The intruders, and I never found out who they were making sounds like owls to mark their progress so that they could tell where each of their team was and about how fast he was moving. It was pretty spooky to hear that, floating across the top of the hill on the breeze. At least, that's what I thought they were doing. That's what it seemed like to me. But it was ludicrous. It sounded like we were being attacked by a herd of owls. The one farthest west would hoot, followed by the next man to the east, and then the next, until all six had indicated their position, then a pause, and then it would start all over again. I couldn't believe what I was observing. I still find it very difficult to understand how anybody thought they were going to get away with such a thing. It was just so stupid. It occurred to me that they must have been city boys to even imagine such a thing. I could see the sentries behind them in the scope as they moved toward the house, weapons at the ready. This was too good to be true. We could have massacred them, but not one of us wanted to ever have to hurt anyone if we didn't really have to do it. That is when, ladies and gentlemen, I had what I call a brain burner. You see, I began, ladies and gentlemen, to hoot too. And then back came the hoots from the intruders. A few minutes later, the sentries caught on, and they began to hoot, just like owls. It was the most incredible thing I ever heard. I could barely contain myself. It was so incredibly funny. They hooted. We hooted. They moved on toward the house. We closed in upon them. Everybody hooting right along. I was tempted to call for reinforcements, but I instinctively knew that we weren't going to need them because it was only a matter of time. And then that time came. Everybody stopped dead in their tracks. It was so quiet I could hear my own heartbeat. And our visitors began looking around in full-blown panic. They had finally counted the hoots. And there were four more than there should have been, coming from places where no one was supposed to be, at least no one of them. I could imagine their shock, can you? And the rest of this is going to be incredibly hard for me to do because every time I think of all of this, I begin to laugh. The man nearest the drive dove to the ground and found himself face to face with all 110 pounds of the most fearsome dog in Arizona. And the reason he dove to the ground, which I forget to put in the story on the website, is that either Crusher moved or he moved and caused the security lights to come on, all 600 watts of them, and lit up the whole top of the darn mountain. Scared the hell out of him. He hit the dirt right in front of Crusher. Well, Crusher was on his cable. And when the two came face to face, Crusher was only about 3 inches from his nose. Crusher, my faithful Crusher, who'd been silently watching and waiting, erupted into a mouthful of snarling teeth just inches away. If he had been 3 inches closer, the man would not have a face to this day. He would never have a face again. It would have been Crusher's. I can tell you, Michael Jackson's moonwalk is absolutely nothing compared to what that man did on his belly to get away from that dog. That's when they all began to run in opposite directions back down the hill. Oh, my goodness. This is too much. This is way too much, ladies and gentlemen. I don't... let's see what we can do here to give me a break to recover my composure. Don't go away. I'll be right back. they ran down the hill, folks, in full panic, terrified, I can imagine, knowing that they had militia behind them and on their flank at that point, and seeing what happened to their friend who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time when the lights came on. Geese honked, dogs howled, and pandemonium reigned for at least, I'm not going to make it, 20 minutes while they made their escape. The noise probably woke everyone. In fact, I have no doubt the noise woke everyone within a quarter mile at the bottom of the hill. The sentries and I sank to our knees in violent fits of laughter. And for a while, that's all you could hear on the top of this mountain was four guys laughing, rolling on the ground. And we laughed. And I got to tell you that all of my stomach muscles and my ribs are so sore because I've been laughing ever since. And now you know what all the noise was about last night if you live in Eager, Arizona. I hope that you didn't lose too much sleep. And I don't think, ladies and gentlemen, that any of us who were up on this hill are ever in our lives going to ever forget last night. And I don't think anyone will ever be able to convince any of those guys, whoever they were, to come back up here ever again. And then I gotta tell you, it was a real hoot. And I'm not kidding you one bit, folks. It was a real hoot. Now, I want you all to understand I have no idea who these people were. Not at all. All I can tell you for sure is they were not from any law enforcement agency in Apache County. Patriots are everywhere here. And if they had come from any of the police departments or sheriff's department or DPS or anybody in Apache County, I would have known long before they ever got here. Patriots are everywhere in this county. Everywhere. If you live in this county, don't make the mistake of thinking that patriots don't know what's going on. They do. Always. I don't know if they were state, federal, bounty hunters, or just a bunch of fools thinking that they might get a reward. I will tell you this, though. They did the right thing. And I thank God that they had control of themselves, because if any one of them had fired any weapon, we would have had to kill them all. And it would have been very easy. You see, six men outflanked and having their enemy to the rear of their position is in the most vulnerable spot that they could possibly imagine. And they had not fought anything out that far. I guess they thought we were just a bunch of dummies up here. Well, now they know we're not. So I'm very happy that nobody got hurt. I have no idea what their ultimate intentions were. I have a feeling it was murder. But my intentions have never been of that sort and never will be. I will defend myself unless a civil war starts. And if a civil war starts, then I will go on the full-blown offensive and put to use everything I ever learned in Vietnam, which is what I did last night in my defense. Most people are afraid of the dark. In Vietnam, the darkness became my bosom buddy. I hated lights. We patrolled only at night. A light was a target. When I first arrived in Vietnam, my first patrols to learn the river were on what they called light boats. Had a canopy over the top of the after deck with this big, giant television-looking thing and a Marine set behind it who was, he had the MOS to operate this light. And it was infrared, I thought, until one night he spotted somebody on the north bank in a free fire zone with the infrared, and the boat captain told him to hit him with the light. And I was peeking over the top, and he flicked his handle on the side of this thing, and I guess opened up a shutter or a filter, and the whole world lit up. This thing was so powerful, I couldn't believe it. And as soon as he did that, tracer rounds and bullets came from everywhere toward us. Well, I learned a lesson from that, if nobody else on the river did. My standing orders to my crew were, you don't strike a match on deck, you don't allow a cigarette to be unshielded, you don't light a flashlight, you don't light anything. If you do, and the enemy doesn't get you, I will. I love the night. The night doesn't scare me. I know how to operate at night. I know how to develop night vision and keep it, maintain it. I know how to use night vision. I know every bush, every tree, every blade of grass, every rock on the top of this hill. Every hole, every indentation, every place that affords protection, the whole works. And so there you have it, the story of the attack of the teenage ninja owls. It took place right here last night on top of this hill between 2 and 3 a.m. this morning. I hope that it doesn't happen again. But, ladies and gentlemen, it might. And if it does, I'm ready. For anything, as a matter of fact. I'm ready. And so is everybody else in this valley who is an ally, members of the militia, and just plain citizens who are truly pissed off at what's happened to me and my family. Good night. God bless each and every single one of you. Don't forget to send in your donations. Good night, Annie Poon Allison. I love you. And I'm so happy that you're not here during this very dangerous time.